Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Wednesday live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. It's great to have you in. Chris Ballard, GM of the Indianapolis Colts. They had a great draft. He's going to be joining me next hour. Lane Kiffin, SEC football coach, Ole Miss. The polarizing, controversial Lane Kiffin joins us. And Nick Wright, at Get Nick Wright in his Twitter account, is going to be joining us in about 30 minutes from now. Joy, how are you? It's Wednesday. It's beautiful. The summer, it feels like it's officially here. There was more traffic when I drove to work today. I don't know about you, but I saw a lot of traffic. How about you?
There is more traffic. But again, like I said yesterday, where's everybody going?
Work. They don't want to tell our governor that, but they're going to work.
Or maybe they're just, you know, I know people are just wanting to get out of the house, so they're just taking drives.
At 5:45 in the morning, it was busy.
They're trying to keep their routine, I guess. I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll start with this. There's a big story out. Bob McGinn wrote for, newspapers in Wisconsin and Green Bay for like 4 decades. Now he's at The Athletic, which is a great landing spot for a lot of these young and old writers. Bob McGinn is not a clickbait guy. He doesn't do media. We invited him on the show today. He's not a guy that does a bunch of media. He's not looking for attention. He's very covert. He really just does, you know, he writes columns and that's it. But, of course, if you criticize, Packer fans are a very strange group. If you ever criticize Aaron Rodgers, Aaron's the victim. We're just picking on Aaron. Nobody ever picks on Drew Brees. Nobody ever picks on Tom Brady. Aaron's the one quarterback in the league. Everybody's just picking on. Anyway, Bob McGinn says in his column this week about the Packers draft, public niceties aside, my sense is Matt LaFleur, the new coach, fresh from a terrific 13-3 baptismal season, simply had enough of Rodgers' act and wanted to change the narrative. With a first-round talent on the roster, the Packers would gain leverage with their imperial quarterback and his passive-aggressive style. If the Packers do indeed want to become a running team next year, they surely wouldn't want Rodgers rocking the boat and becoming even more difficult to coach. So the point being, he calls him imperial. I doubt he's just making this up. It's his opinion, and Bob McGinn is certainly more qualified than any Packer fan to have an opinion. But I went last night, and I went on Twitter to watch it, and what a shock. Whoever criticizes Aaron Rodgers, that's who the Packer fans attack. His brother criticized Aaron Rodgers. He's a loser. His dad criticized him. He just sponging off him. Bob McGinn is nobody. Coach Greg Jennings, he's a bitter. It's always blame the messenger. Ask yourself this in life. Why doesn't this criticism happen to other quarterbacks? Why? Are we just picking on Aaron? Nobody's picking. Russell Wilson had one article written about him. That's it. Everybody else likes him. Everybody likes Tom. Everybody likes Matt Ryan. Everybody likes Breeze. I don't see these articles about Jared Goff. I don't see these. I mean, it's like, do you think we're making stuff up with Baker Mayfield, or Baker Mayfield's got lousy judgment? Do you think we're making stuff up about Aaron Rodgers, or maybe he's passive aggressive and prickly and difficult to get along with and has a big ego? Why would we pick on Baker Mayfield? He's in Cleveland. It's not like it's a really important franchise. Why would we pick on Aaron Rodgers? Everybody likes Green Bay. Green Bay's is the small town underdog. You know, Green Bay's one of those cities, one of those teams like the Saints and the Packers. They're kind of like America likes them. America can hate the Raiders. America can hate the New York teams and the Philadelphia teams and the Patriots. Everybody likes Green Bay. So why? Nobody picked on Favre all the time. Why are we picking on Aaron Rodgers? You'll meet people like this in life. Somebody's watching my show right now, and he has a much more successful brother than him or more successful sister. And instead of blaming himself, he's the victim. Mom gave them bread. I mean, they've been very lucky. I mean, they got certain breaks. Certain people want to play the victim. And Packer fans always, Always blame the messenger. Duh. Aaron's a victim. In fact, I saw this come out yesterday. This was ridiculous. So there was this graphic that made it all over the internet yesterday. Touchdown passes to first-round draft picks. Aaron's only had one in his career, as if first-round draft picks are everything. I mean, Pete Carroll's butchered half his first-round draft picks. He's a legend drafting. Why? What he does in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round. So, first of all, this is deceptive. The Packers did not have a first-round pick when they drafted Jordy Nelson. They took Jordy Nelson top of the second, 36th, and he had 70 touchdowns with Green Bay. So that would have put Aaron closer to the middle of this mix. Also, has Russell Wilson had great support, offensive line support? No. Great wide receiver first-round pick support? No. Nobody complains. Russell Wilson doesn't complain about it. Nobody has to defend Russell Wilson. He just makes it work. So, in my opinion, nobody in life is always a victim. Nobody gets talked about this like Aaron Rodgers. If you think Aaron's just a victim of Bob McGinn and a victim of Greg Jennings and a victim of Mike McCarthy, he's just a victim. I can't help you because I don't think people are victims. I think your reputation over the course of 20, 30, 15, 10, 5 years in any industry is – Jay Cutler had a reputation – is difficult. He just got divorced. I don't like to hear that, but he's difficult. He was difficult before that. He's difficult. People I know Jay Cutler and like him and say, he's just a pain in the butt. Jay's a pain in the butt. Jeff George, a pain in the butt. I mean, I've known people who know him. Jason Whitlock defends him, knows him. So, you know, Aaron's a pain in the butt. He's prickly. He can be arrogant. He's passive aggressive. He's an eye roller. He's a finger pointer. Nobody's just picking on him. And by the way, if first-round wide receivers guaranteed success, then the Detroit Lions would be the Patriots. Because they drafted a first-round receiver at one point not long ago, 3 years in a row. Since when has that been the tipping point on success? You know, they don't draft first-round wide receivers. Well, they do. It just so happens Marvin Harrison went in the first round to Peyton Manning, was great, so Peyton's got a zillion touchdown passes to a first-round quarterback. Marvin Harrison accounts for more than half those, I'm sure. All right. Shift gears to this. So yesterday was actually, over the last week, and I thought yesterday was a tipping point on this, a five-star point guard from UCLA who had committed decided, I'm not going to go to UCLA. I'm going to go play in the G League. His name is Deshaun Nix. Now that is three five-star high school players that are saying, we're not going to college. We're going to go to the G League. So bottom line is the NBA has been creating this G League for years and years and years and years and years because they want to control, quote, their players slash assets earlier, and the players also want to get paid. Some kids just don't want to go to college. There's some good and bad to this. The good for a kid is he plays against pros. He's going to make some scratch. He's a pro earlier. And a lot of kids don't want to go to college. That's not, you know, not everybody's built for college. The downside is the coaching's going to be egregious at some times. The towns you're playing in are awful mostly. And I don't think it's a great platform to show your smile, your game, your personality like Duke, Kansas, Syracuse, or a college program is for a year. But the top 10 to 12 high school kids in the country now are going to go to the G League. They're not going to go to college basketball. That's not the end of college basketball. College basketball's regular season has been irrelevant for 15 years. College basketball has been a three-week sport. It's a bracket, not a sport, for the last 15 years. Nothing's going to change there. And we also have to be comfortable with sports do change. When I was a kid growing up, there was no UFC. Boxing was awesome. And then UFC arrived, and boxing shrank for about 10 years, and UFC ruled the world, and now boxing and UFC are both viable. When I was growing up, I'm sure this was the case with Joy, the Olympics were big. Like, the Olympics were everything. I don't have a friend now. The World Cup now is what my friends watch. That's the big global event. I'm not saying the Olympics don't matter. People will watch it. But my buddies that I live around in Manhattan Beach, they're all World Cup guys. They're not into the Olympics in curling. It does gymnastics. They don't care. They're into the World Cup. In the 70s, when I was a kid, baseball was king and the World Series was everything. Now football's the king and the Super Bowl rules the world. Sports change. College basketball is no longer a growing, thriving business. But you know what this comes? You know what this comes down to? Is that once again, and I hit on this theme all the time. Doesn't matter what business you're in, you gotta adapt. You gotta evolve. And basketball has always been a sport where the player's more important than the coach. That's just a fact. That's just a, I'm not saying basketball coaches don't matter, but you win when you have talent. In the NFL, you can have all sorts of talent. You got a bad coach, you're a bad team. In the NBA, you got a bunch of good players. They may fight and you may not win a championship, but you're going to win some games. You're going to win some games. And basketball, the NCAA is a big, slow-footed, red tape bureaucracy, and they should have seen 5 or 6 years ago that the NBA was creating a G League and it was getting better and better and better and better. And the NCAA this morning reacted to that G League move by saying, okay, we're going to pay the players now. Okay, we'll give them money for likeness and YouTube. Okay, we were wrong on that. No. You can't treat your wife like crap and then she's willing to walk out the door on you and you go, hey, I got some roses for you. It's a little late. You treat somebody like crap for 15 years. Oh, honey, I got some roses. She's packed her suitcase and left. NCAA, big, slow, reactive, not proactive. You could see this G League coming. It was like a slow left hook. You know, it was like you saw it coming for 10 years. They create the G League, and then they found Gatorade and a supporter of it. They were growing it. And slowly but surely, what they were doing is saying, hey, NCAA, we think you're a bad business. Our kids want to get paid and play with other pros earlier like they do in Europe, and we're going to start paying them. And the NCAA, no. Sat up in, you know, their big ivory towers, and they just didn't recognize it. And this morning, the young players are leaving, and the NCAA now this morning reacts and goes, well, we probably should have. Okay, now we'll give you some money for your likeness. It's too late. I don't think it kills college basketball. I think the regular season's been dead for a decade and a half. I still think we'll watch March Madness. I still think people that live in Madison, Wisconsin will watch the Badgers play. I still think people that live in Lexington, Kentucky will watch the Wildcats play. People that live in Syracuse will watch Jim Boeheim, his team play. Tobacco Road, UNC, Duke, they're going to still watch those guys play. And there's still going to be some really, really good players that will play in the NBA that will go to college. But this is about the NCAA not paying attention. Bureaucrats, big, arrogant, not watching what's happening fundamentally at the kind of G League level. It's been happening for years and years. It started, and it was pretty bad, and then they got like Gatorade. Didn't it used to be called something else? Then it was the G League for Gatorade. Then they put more money into it and more, and they woke up this morning, and the G League now will pay guys $500,000. You know, if you're the right guy. So, I don't feel sorry for anybody. I think the world changes. I've been doing sports forever. Baseball's not as big as it used to be. The World Cup's bigger. The Olympics don't feel quite as big. College basketball is shrinking. Boxing was big, shrunk, back. UFC didn't even exist. XFL tried, left. It may come back. Everything's changing. Sports gambling now is legal in Europe years ago. Now it's legal increasingly in America. You got to see the changes before they hit you in the face. And the NCAA was slow and reactive, not proactive on this. And it cost them some players. That's life.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I've said this before. Steph Curry is not as great a basketball player as LeBron James, but he has unbelievable influence, more influence than LeBron James. Every high school basketball, AAU basketball, college basketball game, it's three-pointers now. That's Steph Curry. People, I'm not saying people forget this, but the three-point shot was around for 20 years. It was around for 20 years. It was considered a bad shot forever. And then Steph came. And now if you don't have four guys on the floor that can shoot it, it's a huge liability. You can have one guy that doesn't shoot a three, a power forward or a center. Outside of that, they even want Anthony Davis of the Lakers now to shoot some threes. So the influence Steph has had is greater than LeBron. LeBron's just a better player. Maybe Patrick Mahomes will be better all time than Russell Wilson, Brady, all that stuff. But Russell Wilson's influence is undeniable. Tom Brady's not getting guys drafted. Russell Wilson got Tua drafted. He got Johnny Manziel drafted. He got Kyler Murray drafted. Frankly, he got Baker Mayfield drafted. All these short guys, nobody used to want to draft anybody under 6'3 as a quarterback. And Jalen Hurts got drafted this weekend. And what did Philadelphia's GM Howie Roseman say? He goes, well, we missed on Russell Wilson in 2012 and 2012, and that's who we wanted. We had a plan. We had a vision, and it started with Russell Wilson. And he got picked by Seattle right before us. So we went with Nick Foles. And You know, there would be no Carson Wentz in Philadelphia if that had happened, and the Eagles, my guess, would have a Super Bowl or two more than they had. So Russell Wilson now gets Jalen Hurts drafted because Howie Roseman's like, we missed on Russell. We're not doing it again, and I see a lot of Russell Wilson. What's interesting about this is when you have influence, generally speaking, the copycats miss. Michael Jordan had this. Michael Jordan was a ball-dominant guard. It used to be your point guard was a passer. Your guards didn't take up too much space. It was a big guy's league. It was a center's league. And then Michael Jordan came in, and you're like, oh, you don't need centers. They had Bill Winnington, Will Perdue, Luke Longley. That's not a center league. You can just have a ball-dominant guard who does all the scoring. And so everybody started falling for it. Let's get Iverson, and let's get Marbury, and let's get Stevie Francis, and let's get Damon Stoudemire. And he didn't get any titles. They were all good players. But people, it wasn't until Kobe came along, and even Kobe needed bigs, but Kobe shared the most traits with Michael. Relentless, super, super basketball and human being smart, aspirational, coachable enough. And then finally, you know, Kobe was about 85% or 80% Michael. You finally found of all the people that looked and kind of played like him, it was like, oh, one finally works, but he needed a center, Shaq and Gasol, and he needed a great brand, the Lakers. Russell Wilson's got a lot of guys out there, Jalen Hurts and Baker Mayfield and Tua and Johnny Manziel. I think one of them, eventually we're going to find a copycat that's going to be about 80-85% of Russell. I think Kyler Murray, to me, is interesting. Like Russell, baseball player, like Russell, knows how to slide and not get hit. Like Russell, throws a beautiful football. Kyler Murray throws a beautiful football. But I do think there are things that Michael Jordan brought to the table that other guys just didn't have. And I think there's stuff Russell Wilson brings to the table. I mean, his family was like college presidents and went to Dartmouth. I mean, like by any standard of brain power for a pro athlete, like Russell's, Russell also had a chip on his shoulder. His college coach at North Carolina State said, hit the road. We like Mike Glennon. He also is maybe the most emotionally mature person I've ever met at 22 years old when I first met Russell Wilson. So there are some things with Russell that are so unbelievable that you'll never be able to duplicate. You can duplicate his size. Kyler certainly kind of plays like him. But I think Russell and Michael are just so otherworldly that you could get a duplication. Kobe was a duplication, but just the relentlessness of Michael will never be duplicated. It's like Roy Williams said this week, I've never met a player that practiced harder, worked harder, played harder, cared more, and there's nothing else like that with Michael. Same with Russell Wilson. I mean, between the Dartmouth dad, the chip on the shoulder, he used to run as a kid through malls, weaving in and out of people. His childhood was unique. And then let's be honest about it. Whereas Michael got Phil Jackson, Russell got Pete Carroll. That helps, too. It helps to get a Hall of Fame coach. That helps, too.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's the host of First Things First. He's my buddy, and we disagree in a lot. Joining us now via Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing, is Nick Wright. Okay, let's start with this. Bob McGinn, very respected writer. Very respected. He's worked for almost four decades in many prized institutions of writing. He said Matt LaFleur, he suggested, has had enough of Rodgers, and that's why they got Jordan Love. What did you make of that comment?
Well, listen, you're right. McGinn is as plugged into the Packers as any writer is plugged in with any team. He's obviously getting this from very informed sources. The front office coaching staff's obviously talking to Bob McGinn. So what I made of it is, who the hell do these people in Green Bay think they are? Like, honestly, like what exactly do they think they do around there? The new GM, Brian Gutekunst, who his first decision he made as general manager of the team was had a first-round pick. Derwin James is on the board, and he's like, let's trade out of this pick. Who could use a future Hall of Famer safety only so the next year they had to trade up in the draft to draft a safety? Or Matt LaFleur, who's bathed himself in such glory. He was the offensive coordinator for the 10th-ranked offense with the Rams. He left, and they became the second-ranked offense. Then he goes to Tennessee. He coordinates the 25th-ranked offense in football. He leaves. They become the 12th-ranked offense. Then he goes to Green Bay. And for the first time in forever, they have a below-average offense. Those people think, you know, they're sick of tolerating Aaron Rodgers. I'd love to hear the leak story in the media trade of how Tui and Pagan are sick of dealing with Colin Coward. Give me a break. and the folks are like, oh, he's moody, he's passive-aggressive. To quote Dom Draper once again, that's what the money's for, guys, to make him feel good and to deal with it. Yeah. I know we feel differently about this because you called me this weekend to discuss it, and I'm going to be totally honest with you, Colin, because I do love you and because we are such close friends. I totally sandbagged during that conversation. I let you think I might kind of agree with you only because I wanted to do this on the radio. So I saved our actual personal conversation. I set it aside. But this is ridiculous, and Rodgers should be furious.
All right. You make good, valid points. Let me support. Everybody's bagging on Philadelphia drafting Jalen Hurts, and my takeaway is it's a Super Bowl bubble roster. You know, they're in that 8-9 teams. And Carson Wentz can't finish his season as much as I love him. I think he has the second-best arm in the league, honestly, to Patrick Mahomes. But I think it makes sense when you have a very good team. This is why RG3 is behind Lamar. You find a stylistically somewhat similar player. Jets went out and got a Sam Darnold clone from a school nobody watches play, but he's very much plays like Darnold. So Jalen Hurts is going to play this year. I think he's probably better than we all think as a pro prospect. It didn't bother me at all. Did it bother you?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. I didn't love Doug Peterson coming out and being like, let me make this clear. Carson's our starting quarterback, because he didn't need to say that.
Yeah.
When FS1 hired me and then you would take vacation and I would fill in, no one sent a press release. Let me make this clear. Nick Wright's not replacing Colin Coward. Nobody thought I was, but if that press release came out, you might be like, well, why did you even need to say that?
Yeah,
is there something I don't know here? But I actually think Jalen Hurts might be the first player drafted because of Taysom Hill. I don't buy Taysom Hill as a starting NFL quarterback at all. He's completed 7 passes in his career, but he is a valuable weapon. And for the team that goes for more fourth down conversions than any team in the league, and for the team that goes for more 2-point conversions than any team in the league, Jalen Hurts absolutely can get on the field and help you right now, even if Carson Wentz is healthy for all 16 games. So I like the pick a lot, actually, and I think it gives him a chance to develop, and we'll see if in 3 years maybe he is a viable starting quarterback, but in the meantime, he'll get on the field. Unlike, of course, the guy the Packers draft who they hope never sees the field for 2 years unless they decide they're just sick of tolerating Aaron Rodgers.
Let's shift to basketball, The Last Dance. So I said yesterday the Pistons are viewed as they should be viewed. Muhammad Ali was handsome and great and glamorous and classy, and that's how he's viewed. Larry Holmes was a heavyweight champ, but the rest of it, he wasn't. That's how he's viewed. And if you do a doc on Larry Holmes, it doesn't portray him like it portrays Muhammad Ali and his greatness and his global touch. I think if you look back in history, the Pistons come off bad because I don't think they were good for the league. They were inartistic, they tackled people, and they lacked class when they eventually lost the crown. You don't like how they're being portrayed, I'm told.
Well, listen, you know, it's a 10-hour documentary, and so you would think you would have time to tell the whole story, but, I mean, I guess, I don't know. Listen, I've never made a film. The doc goes from Jordan's 63-point game against the Celtics and then immediately goes to the Scottie Pippen migraine game, the Game 7 loss to the Pistons, which is interesting because it skipped the year after the 63-point game when he got swept by the Celtics. The year after that, when the Pistons whooped him, and the year after that when the Pistons whooped them too, but I guess, listen, if Jordan's got some creative control, they can't include that full story of his career in the doc. But that's neither here nor there. The fact of the matter is this. I didn't like the fact that, listen, nobody likes Isaiah Thomas but me, evidently. Maybe he's rubbed people the wrong way, and I get it. You know, Generation X needs safe spaces, and if people don't shake their hands, they're going to go cry and things like that. Us millennials were tougher. We were brought up harder, so we wouldn't have been so upset about a missed handshake 30 years later. But that Pistons team, Colin, could have won 4 consecutive titles. They should have won 3 consecutive titles if they didn't get hosed on a foul call on Bill Laimbeer in the 88 finals.
And I don't think Isaiah gets the respect he deserves that he did beat Magic, he did beat Bird, he did beat Jordan repeatedly, and he did it without another top 50 player on his roster. He did it without another all-time great offensive player anywhere around him. And so, I understand it's the Jordan doc, so they're going to focus on that part of the story. I just think that those Pistons teams, especially in the late 80s before they got old, were just all-time good.
Well, I think I don't think they've aged well, because I think they were so much about toughness and if they had today's rules, they would just be an average team because they didn't have a lot of shooters. To your point, Isaiah was their only truly gifted offensive player. I think that they're like the Baltimore Ravens with Ray Lewis and Trent Dilfer. They would not age well. Because you couldn't grab wide receivers. But given the rules that the NBA allowed with the Pistons and the NFL allowed with those Ravens defenses, they were great in their moment.
They were unbelievable. And one other thing that I did really like about the doc these last two episodes was it showed you in the shot against Cleveland, it reminded you that Ron Harper was on the Cavs and maybe should have been guarding Jordan. And
yeah.
They talk about Dennis Rodman being on the Pistons and being such a great defender. And maybe they'll, investigate this in the next six episodes. It's so interesting because Ron Harper then ended up playing with Jordan and Rodman then ended up playing with Jordan. And I just remember being told that these guys would never team up with their rivals. It's just a new thing. It's young guys. And yet all these guys, they end up on the Bulls. I'm very fascinated to see how it plays out.
It's frankly, folks, if Nick drives you crazy, it is the mythology of now players are just joining forces. Yeah, Michael ended up with the best Euro, Ron Harper, Dennis Rodman, the best coach. Yeah, it's funny how it works.
I mean, it's interesting. And load management, by the way, is something only soft young players do. Hey, Dennis, you back from Vegas yet? You good, bro? I don't know. I mean, that seemed to happen 30 years ago, but what do I know?
My buddy Nick Wright, good talking to you, my man.
Talk to you later, man. See you.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So Chris Ballard is coming on. So Chris Ballard, I have about six GMs in the NFL that I text. And, Tom Telesco is my buddy with the Chargers. We'll go to dinner. And I don't give away any of the secrets. But once the draft's over, I think it's okay to say, Chris Ballard liked Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor and Jacob Eason, and he landed all of them, and I knew that. So when I watched the draft and they had Pittman and Jonathan Taylor, I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to get both these guys. And I went crazy on Instagram, and Chris Ballard entering his fourth season. So, I mean, now I can share stuff now that the draft is over. Let's talk about Pittman. You had asked me we had talked about Pittman or texted about Pittman. This was somebody, Chris, you really liked, and you got him. That must have been a great feeling for you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
You bet.
First. Hi, Joy. How you doing? Every time I'd listen to you, so I've been home, the last, month and a half,
yeah.
And so I'm listening to your show, and every time you bring up Pittman, I'm cringing, going, are you freaking kidding me? He's pumping this guy up, and
he's a great player, so, Chris. You know what I liked about him? Freshman year, he came to USC. He played, and he was a dominant special teams player, and I thought, God, this kid is 18 years old. He walks into the program. I think he's their best special teams player. Did you go look at that film?
We saw it all. So we always do. And our scouts do a great job going back and looking. And look, guys, that I'll never forget when we drafted Charles Tillman, when I was early in my career in Chicago. And
yeah.
He was a great teams player right away. I mean, guys that, football players that, they just find a way to produce no matter what role you ask them to play in. And, that's the one thing with Michael is every year you saw him get better. You saw him dominate on teams early in his career. You saw him go through a multitude of different quarterbacks and still produce at wideout. I think it's almost overlooked. Everybody says, well, he didn't have 1,000 yards his junior year, but I think he averaged over 17 yards a catch. We feel very fortunate to get him. And think he's going to be a great addition to our team.
An NFC general manager, after you drafted Jonathan Taylor, texted me and said, you know, Ballard is killing this. I said before, I don't see a huge gap. Jonathan Taylor and Saquon Barkley. I think Jonathan's feet A+, his speed A+. So I think Barkley's great. So that's not a knock on Saquon Barkley. People do wonder if Jonathan Taylor can catch it much. Let's talk about him. And is that a legitimate criticism?
It's the way they used him. When you break down all his catches from this year and how we're going to use him in the pass game, I mean, look, there might be three or four backs, and you're talking Kamara, you know, you're talking McCaffrey, now the kid that Kansas City drafted that you can really be true mismatches in the passing game. But the rest of them, Frank brought this point up to me because I kept asking questions about, you know, how are we going to use on third down, you know, and especially even on early downs, how are we going to use it? Because, Chris, most of the balls that backs catch, swings, checkdowns, and screen game, that's it. And that's how we'll use our backs. We think Jonathan's going to be very good at that. Look, we think Marlon Mack's good at it.
Yeah.
So now the ability to have two backs that both can create explosive plays, both in the run game and in the passing game, is really going to help.
You've had, really, if you go back to your career in Kansas City, you drafted Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill. You got Darius Leonard and Quentin Nelson, Malik Hooker. Now Pittman Taylor. Jacob Eason's an interesting prospect, and I want to talk about him. Is that Eason, I grew up in the Northwest, and so I've seen a lot of Eason. I probably watched 10 games a year that were on TV. Strong arm. I did think sometimes when defenses made shifts in the second half, he could struggle, but he didn't throw to NFL wide receivers. He had to throw a lot of guys open at Washington last year. So I think he's a little bit of a project, but if I said to you he could start in the following year, not this year, does he project to be that good early enough?
Well, I've kind of pumped the brakes on the starting, everybody bringing out that, you know, that narrative just from the plain fact that he's got work to do. You know, he's really been a one-year starter in college, and he's got a lot of work to do, and Jacob knows that. But we feel good about the situation we're putting him into. We feel good putting him behind Phillip and Jacoby, letting him compete. And get better and grow with Frank and, you know, his leadership and his ability to coach quarterbacks. So, look, we think Jacob's got a lot of talent, but he's got a ways to go, and he knows that. He knows he's got a lot of work to put in.
Chris Ballard joining us, Colts GM. So I've always had this – I always push back on this. For years and years I was told, you just draft the best player available. And the analogy I always use, if I went to the store and my wife said, we need milk, cereal, and eggs, and I came back with a rake – and I said, well, it was 75% off. She'd be like, well, that's not what we need. And so you know what I mean? So I'm always like, yeah, I get best player available if you're in a total rebuilding situation. But the Chargers needed a franchise quarterback and a linebacker. You needed a number two wide receiver. And you also, I believe, needed to be a little bit more dynamic offensively. So where is the best guy available? And just he's really, really good, and he fits a need. How do you balance that?
Well, look, you don't want to – on draft day, and I learned this a long time ago, don't ever pass up what you think is a great player. If you think the guy is a unique, special talent, I don't care what position he is. I brought up when we talked about Quentin Nelson, they asked me, he goes, well, you know, great player versus need. And it just happened. They said, well, you can't take a guard at six. And I said, well, why not? I said, this guy's a unique talent. That's who we're taking. We're taking unique talent. So you never pass up a unique talent. And then number two, when it comes need versus best player, well, if the guy's not a unique talent and it's even, then you're going to take the need. You know, our whole vision this offseason was to create – look, we needed to add more what we thought could be star players.
Yes.
And, you know, that's where Buckner came into play. When we got into the – to add some guys with some unique traits offensively to help, you know, our offense create more explosive plays, that's where Pittman and that's where Taylor came into play.
Phillip Rivers, you know, when he has protection – he's only a year removed from having a very good year. I think sometimes, you know, recency bias. He struggled last year. But if you go 2 years ago, he was very good. In the end, there, you know, the knock on him is, yeah, a lot, some interceptions you don't love. He's not terribly athletic anymore, if he ever was. What was the day you made the decision to bring Phillip in? Do you remember it, the discussions you were having?
Yeah, we had discussions internally, you know, all through when we started evaluating. I mean, we do a deep evaluation of our own team, which is some, I mean, those are difficult discussions internally, you know, because it's players that you like, but, you know, do we need to try to improve in these positions? And, you know, Frank and Nick, our offensive coordinator, both had exposure and history with Phillip. And you got a chance, a guy that knows the offense. They know what he's going to bring to our football team. And look, we played against him early in the season. I mean, we played against him week one, and he played really well against us. And, you know, and when you watch the one thing about Phillip that I think is underappreciated, like, he doesn't worry about his stats. He's playing to win. And there's some of those interceptions. Look, I mean, they got to come down, and he knows it. But Phillip's going to play to win. He's not going to play to protect himself. There's times in games where he's going to make throws that other people won't even try when they're down in the game, but he's trying to create a big play. So we think we can have that. We think we can protect him. We think we're going to be able to run the ball with him and do some things to help Phillip out. And just his presence and experience and things that are not always – you don't always see on the field that he's going to bring to an organization, we thought we needed.
Chris Ballard was the former Bears director of scouting. Then he went to the Chiefs and ran their football operations. Now his fourth year as the Colts general manager. Was voted the executive of the year a couple years ago by the Pro Football Writers Association. He's joining us here on the Herd. So a lot of people worried about the you know, the whole virtual nature of it. But we had said the XFL did a virtual draft. The WNBA did a pretty good job. I thought it looked great. I got to be honest with you. I love seeing kids with their families. I loved it. I thought it was incredibly emotional. I know we'll go back to the other way, but were you pleasantly surprised by how fairly seamless the draft came off, or was there a lot of little issues behind the scenes?
I would tell you the little issues popped up before we started. You know, just everybody getting comfortable with the technology that we were using. People are scared of the unknown, Colin.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how that is. I mean, people are scared. Like, when you try to change anything, they're scared of the unknown. They're scared of looking stupid in front of the world. Unfortunately, you know, for me, I've done it enough times where it doesn't bother me, anymore. You're going to make, you know, things aren't always going to go the way you planned. And I think that's what, you know, had people worried about, you know, what we were getting into. But, look, give the league, give the NFL credit. You know, they had a vision. Of how they wanted this thing to look, and they pulled it off. And, like, it was the special – look, to be able to do this with our families is really special. I think it humanized the NFL.
Yes.
For a lot of our fans. I mean, I think they look at our league differently, knowing that, look, you know, we do have families, we do have children. And I tell our group all the time, every decision we make affects not only our organization, but – Our coaches' families, our families, everybody in our organization's families, and I think it was good for them to be a part of it, and good for our country to be able to see that there is another side to this.
Yeah, I think your perfect word. It really humanized the league. It really did. I found myself it's just crazy how much fun I had watching it. I think I watched more of the, and I've loved it forever, but I don't think I turned it off more than 5 minutes or missed 5 minutes. I sat eating sandwiches, potato chips, and Coronas, and watching the draft and cheering people on. That's what I did for 3-4 days.
Hey, there's nothing better than when your son sit behind you and are questioning every move you make. Like, Dad, what are you going to take this guy here? No, I'm not. Well, why not? I don't understand.
That is great. Chris, congrats to you and the Colts. Knocked it out of the park, as always, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me on.